Hello and welcome to March 26th. It's a Tuesday and tonight, Fred again, yes, I'm speaking about him again, is playing the first of his two Auckland shows at Spark Arena, both sellouts. And I realise I didn't give you an update on how I found the gig on Friday in Wally. I loved it. If I could relive one night and one night only of my entire life again, it would be Friday, March 22nd, Waitangi Park, Fred again on stage. And you see, I can say that because my wedding's not till later this year. We'll revisit that statement once that comes around, shall we? Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen and this is what's worth talking about. Instagram is automatically limiting the political content it feeds you. We've got what you need to know. The reaction from Hawke's Bay to a report that says the national emergency system is letting people down and that locals are too optimistic in their planning. Are our supermarkets watching us and how much do they know? We're talking surveillance at the self-checkout, plus what science has to say about flexi working and anxiety. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Instagram is copping a little bit of heat for a recent update it's made, where it now automatically limits the amount of political content it recommends users. The social media platform announced back in February that it would no longer proactively recommend political content in an attempt to reduce the amount of similar content that ended up being fed to people. But what does all of this actually mean? Well, joining us now is Stuff Audio senior journalist Aaron Darman. Aaron, why has Instagram made this move in the first place?
Naturally, Meta says it wants Instagram and Threads to be, quote, a great experience for everyone. As a result, a press release last month noted that Instagram doesn't want to get between you and accounts that post political posts, but also doesn't want to proactively recommend political content from accounts you don't follow. So it's trying to find a middle ground, and really it's trying to stop people ending up with political content on loop that can include mis- or disinformation, which then tends to reinforce people's beliefs and in turn sometimes spill out into real-world consequences. Of course, it also begs the question, what constitutes political content?
So is my Instagram feed going to actually look and feel any different?
Well, yes and no. Basically, users of Instagram will now have to go into their settings under suggested content, click political content, and choose the option to not limit political content from people you don't follow. Otherwise, Instagram will limit political content from accounts the user doesn't follow by default. The same applies for Twitter copycat app Threads. And the important bit is people you don't follow. So if you're following people of a political nature, don't worry, that content remains. But if you look at the likes of your recommended feed, for example, then, Imo, you might see a difference.
This has started to really generate some conversations online. What has been the reaction?
According to CNN, some initially viewed the decision to reduce recommended political content as positive, the hope being that it reduces algorithmic rabbit holes and inflammatory content. But ahead of a big election in the US, there are worries about the scope and rationale of the move. One journalist told CNN, "The fact there is no definition of political content is concerning." A Meta spokesperson is reported as offering, well, a vague statement, saying its definition of political content is content likely to be about topics related to government or elections. For example, posts about laws, elections, or social topics. They suggest these global issues are complex and dynamic, and that means the definition will evolve.
It's all very interesting, isn't it? Stuff Audio senior journalist Aaron Darman, kia ora. What do you think? Are you okay with Instagram automatically limiting political content it recommends? Vote in our poll on NZ Stuff Instagram. And if you feel so inclined, flick me an email as well with your thoughts on the topic too, newsable@stuff.co.nz. New Zealand's national emergency system sets up good people to fail. That's the damning finding of an independent review into the civil defence response to Cyclone Gabrielle in Hawke's Bay. The review, which was carried out by former Police Commissioner Mike Bush, says the system is currently not fit for purpose, noting that the state of emergency in the region was declared too late. It also found that lack of situational awareness from local officials led to a positive bias towards a positive outcome instead of planning for the worst. worst-case scenario. To talk more about this report and what it means for future emergency responses is Hastings Mayor Sandra Hazelhurst. Sandra, hello. Thank you for being here. This review makes for pretty stark reading. What did you make of it?
Oh, look, well, it's been a really, really positive move. You know, we commissioned this review last year, and one of the first reviews to get underway, because we wanted to learn lessons and we wanted to make improvements to the CEDM, the emergency management system. Cyclone Gabrielle was New Zealand's largest natural disaster or largest natural weather event. And, you know, we know that the civil defence emergency management system in New Zealand needs transformational change. But the best part about the Bush Consulting Report is that it has made about 75 recommendations of ways in which we can improve and change the way we deliver emergency management to our community, for our community.
Well, speaking of implementing suggestions, are you concerned at all that this might become another report without much action?
There's no way that our group, our committee, our governance team, the mayors and chairs of Hawke's Bay will allow that to happen. We have asked for an independent person to lead this because we're without the capacity for it, you know, and we want independent eyes across this, the expert eyes and leading this action plan. Also to have an independent expert sitting at our governance table. And that's the first time that that will have happened. So we can ask the hard questions and make sure that we're doing everything we possibly can to be prepared for the next event.
What was the biggest failing identified in this report that you found the most important to address straight away?
I think there are many, many parts of it and many priorities, but the main priorities is actually having our community ready and prepared for future events. And, you know, we're really thrilled that we've got $2 million from external funding to set up 60 communities across Hawke's Bay in preparedness and readiness. And they'll have all the equipment they need. The processes and systems from the National Emergency Management System have to change. Mm. There has to be a more coordinated approach across regional and national. This was a national state of emergency, and how that national state of emergency enacts and takes over the regional response is some major work to do. We have to have stronger connections with inter-agency support and sharing intelligence, and have systems that talk to each other so people get the information when they need it, so they can be prepared if they need to leave an area.
Hastings Mayor Sandra Hazelhurst, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
If you're enjoying what you're hearing, don't forget we are here every day, Monday to Friday, except for this Friday, and also next Monday. It's Easter, but that only happens every so often. Every other Monday to Friday, you can enjoy us without even lifting a finger, as long as you've chucked us a like and a follow wherever you get your podcasts. Woolworths is watching you, or more specifically, at some of its supermarkets when you're using the self-checkout, as TikTok user @thenewgag found out over the weekend.
Once I scanned everything, at the end of it, it asked me, "Do you have anything else left in your trolley?" And I was like, "No," click no. It said, "Are you sure?" I'm like, what in the racial profiling is going on? So she pushes okay, she taps the little card, and it comes up with a video, and it can detect that something is in my trolley, which is this. System said, no thieving today. Bitch, back in my day, I would scan a 65-inch TV as an onion.
In August last year, the supermarket chain, which was then Countdown, announced it was rolling out security cameras at the self-checkouts in 5 stores nationwide that would record shoppers and their transactions in a bid to stop people from either outright stealing or putting pine nuts through as carrots. That initiative is now happening at around 60 supermarkets around the country. So will shoppers just accept this increased surveillance when buying groceries? The new gag on TikTok certainly had some concerns. So to help us answer some of these questions, we're joined by Gehan Gunasekara, co-founder of the Independent Privacy Foundation and an associate law professor at Auckland University. Welcome to Newsable.
Yeah, nice to talk to you.
Gehan, it was widely reported on last year when Woolworths, then Countdown, said it was trialling these cameras at self-checkouts. Do you think customers have enough awareness about where and when they're being watched?
Well, I think it depends on the person. I think if you're not specifically looking out for the notices, you're likely to miss them. And this is a specific, very limited trial, just of the self-scanning facility, not to be confused with the facial recognition cameras that are being used by the other chain of supermarkets, the Pack and Save and New World. That's a different trial altogether. So there's a number of these trials going on at the moment, and you need to be very cautious about differentiating them and being specific as to the one that you are identifying.
What's the trial going on at Foodstuff? Sorry, I've not heard of that one.
Well, that's the one with, again, it's a trial. It's under the scrutiny of the Privacy Commissioner of, and it's automatic number plate recognition as well. So they've got two systems in place. They're scanning people's number plates when they drive into the premises, and they're also having facial recognition to identify and target shoplifters and people who have committed violent or disruptive acts against staff. That's what I understand it's for. And the commissioner is monitoring their use of that to make sure that it is done in a non-discriminatory way. That is quite different from the limited trial of the self-scanning technology that's been used by Woolworths, or what used to be Countdown, just to test, check that the people aren't scanning items when they self-scan. Doubling up, because it's very easy to do that. You can just, you'd have two items and you pretend you're putting just one item in there. And I understand that a gentleman has identified this on TikTok. There's actually full video coverage of that, but that's not a facial recognition video camera.
No. These trials across both supermarket chains that we've talked about, they are targeting retail theft, which we do know is a huge issue. Is there any concern, though, that the ways that we're being monitored at the supermarkets might be used another way? Or are you confident that this is solely for retail theft purposes only?
Well, I can't put my hand on my heart and be, I have to go by the assurances that we're given. And I think the good thing in New Zealand is we do have a Privacy Commissioner, and the Privacy Commissioner has considerable powers to investigate, and if they find that the law isn't being complied with, they can actually serve compliance orders on these companies, and they would be at risk of being fined. But it's more the reputational risk to the company if they don't comply with a commissioner order. But we've got a long way short of having a commissioner order against any of these companies. The commissioner is tried to be helpful, and with regard to the Foodstuffs trial, the commissioner is saying, look, you're happy to go along with it, but verifying that the companies are doing what they say they're doing. So that is some reassurance, because if the commissioner finds that, in fact, they are retaining the data for longer than they need, they're using it for some other purpose besides targeting shoplifting and crime, then I imagine we would find out fairly quickly.
Because what do we know about how supermarkets of all stripes and colours are using and collecting our data?
Well, they're supposed to be transparent, and loyalty schemes have these policies, although the Commerce Commission a couple of years ago did a study into that, and the Commerce Commission actually found that the companies weren't being very transparent. And this was not the Privacy Commission, this was the Commerce Commission that was looking into how cost-effective these loyalty schemes were, and the Commerce Commission view was that consumers have pretty much little choice because of the cost of living and the pressures of competition to actually participate in these, because they don't have any alternative. There's no alternative where they can not give away their data. But the question is, how much saving were they making by using these? And in that respect, I think there is a little bit more transparency now, because I see every time I use my Everyday Rewards card that now there's very prominent orange. So you watch for it and you see it and you say, okay, member price this, non-member price that. Now, whether that discount is really worth the amount of data that the company then gets from me as to what alcohol I consume or what brand of product that I buy, that's the question. Is that exchange a fair one?
Gehan Gunasekara, co-founder of the Independent Privacy Foundation, great to hear your thoughts. And in a statement, a Woolworths New Zealand spokesperson told Newsable it has strict policies to protect customer privacy, and that pin pads are blacked out and faces blurred before any footage is reviewed. They also told us there is signage letting customers know the tech is being used, and that they've received a mix of feedback, which they're taking on board where possible. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Job flexibility and job security mean employees are less likely to experience psychological distress or anxiety. A new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association looked at 18,000 working adults and found there was a connection between being able to change your work schedule to fit around your life and being less anxious. And the same went for those who felt they had a low chance of losing their job. There you have it. Flexi working is beneficial to mental health as well as knowing your job's safe. Science says so. Imogen could have said so yesterday, but it is good to know we've got some official confirmation as well. That is Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. Have a wonderful day. I'll catch you soon.
If you like this podcast, please support our work. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.